Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by GetOutOfTheMess.com. Real attorneys at established law firms for around $20 a month. You can't beat it. Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old, rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, personal empowerment coach and host of this show called The Overwhelmed Brain. This is the personal growth show for the critical thinker. On every episode, we'll talk about practical, down-to-earth steps to help you improve your mood and keep you sane in this powerful journey we call life. I want to help you bridge the gap between your emotions and reason, causing you to discover why you do the things you do and what you can do to reach higher levels of happiness and lower levels of stress and overwhelm. Everything I talk about on this show should not be mistaken for actual medical advice or treatment and is intended to be for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your medical treatment. What you will find here is an increase in your emotional intelligence, a strengthening of your self-worth and self-esteem, the motivation to be your authentic self, and the forward momentum to help you learn, heal, grow, and evolve. All right, I want to get into something that I've been hearing about a lot lately, and it's because people write to me and they ask me questions on things like obsessions or obsessive thoughts or even intrusive thoughts. And I'd like to thank a patron member, James, for suggesting this many moons ago. He gave me a list of all the things that he wanted to hear about. And this is one of those topics that I've been thinking about, like, how can I address this? And also, what do I do about my own obsessive thoughts? Is this something I'm just going to teach, but it doesn't work for me? I really needed to just kind of check this out and examine myself and go through the processes myself. And so this morning I had this obsessive thought. Well, I don't really have obsessive thoughts anymore that I know of. I guess if I explore it, which I did this morning, I could find something in there, which I did. It's not so obsessive. Like, I think of an obsessive thought as if you're in a relationship and you keep thinking about the other person's past, or you keep thinking about how the other person looked at someone and you're wondering what's on their mind, and then you have these obsessive thoughts. And you can also be in, like, work, and you go, like, I'm obsessed about getting fired, or I'm obsessed that I'm not making enough money, or I'm obsessed about my bank account. All these thoughts that come in, what do we do about all this internal dialogue that just seems to ruin our day? And so, you know, I've done a lot of work on myself, and I've gotten rid of quite a bit of it. And some of the stuff I've gone through has been a lot of an acceptance process and a healing process and realizations and different perceptions. And when I get to that new place in life, I feel better. I feel better about the people I'm with and around. I feel better about myself. And there's also the idea that, hey, you know, what's the big deal? Life's going to be over in 20, 30, 40 years. I hate to say that, but I look at bigger pictures like that and go, well, it's like that John Popper song, it won't mean a thing in 100 years. And I think about that, it's like, well, I guess that's true. I mean, all the thoughts I'm having now really won't mean a thing in 100 years. It's kind of a maybe a downer way of thinking, but it also allows me to think beyond the focus of a bad thought. So that's just one of my processes. If I get this obsessive, repetitive, bad thought that comes to mind, what can I do about it? So like I said this morning, I had to search for one so that I could try out some things that I'd like to share with you today and about your obsessive thoughts. So here's what I want you to do. Step one, think about a thought that you obsess about or that keeps coming to mind that you don't really like. Maybe that makes you feel bad. I'm not going to give you any time to think about that because if you're obsessed about it, it's already in your mind. So what we're going to do with this thought is loosen up your grip on it a little bit. We're going to shake up your perception of it. So take that obsessive thought. For example, I'm going to use one of the things that I thought about, which is something I used to obsess about, which is an ex-boyfriend of my girlfriend. I'm like, I don't want her talking to him. I don't want her calling him. I don't want her seeing him in person. I don't want her to have anything to do with it. I used to obsess about that. Well, not obsess, but I didn't really like his presence in her life. I'll admit it. So that was a good one for me to practice with this morning. I think that's the closest I can get to something that I might have been obsessed about. I'm going to use that example. You think of one for yourself. You already have it in mind, unless you don't have obsessive thoughts. But if you don't, then, you know, write to me and teach me how you do it. I'd like to know and I can share it with the world. But the first thing is ask yourself this. What's wrong with this thought? Ask yourself that question because you'll come up with an answer. Now, these answers aren't resolutions. All I'm doing is shaking up your perception. I'm loosening the grip that you have on your thought. Because I know when you think about this thought, which you don't have to think about because it automatically appears in your mind, then you have a certain feeling about it. And every time you have this thought, that feeling comes along with it, or the emotion comes along with it. And you probably don't like it. And every time it appears in your mind, it makes you feel that way again. And then you're triggered. And that trigger is what sets your mood for the next 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 days, 10 weeks. And these triggers can really put a downer in life. It makes us feel bad and it makes the people around us feel bad. And sometimes they're like, what's wrong with you? Because you're having these obsessive thoughts. And some of them, you're like, I don't even know why I'm having these obsessive thoughts. I shouldn't have those thoughts at all. It really shouldn't bother me, but it does. So that's what I want you to do is just as you go through these questions, just know that these aren't so much a resolution. They are just to help you expand outside the box that you've put this thought in. And once you've expanded that and you have a different perception of it, or at least a broader perception of it, maybe it won't have such a tight grip on you. All right, you ready? Step one, like I said, what's wrong with that thought? And if you have to pause anytime, go ahead and do that. And just answer these questions and see what comes up for you. Number two is what you're thinking, this thought, a threat in any way? Is it a threat to you? Is it a threat to someone else? And if it's a threat, is it something you need to do something about? Is it something you can do something about? And we're going to talk about that in a moment, about doing something about it. But if it's a threat, if you consider it a threat, what is the threat? I'll use my example. The threat is there's an ex-boyfriend out there that still likes her. Okay, well, I mean, what is the threat about that? If he could like her, but she may not want to, you know, date him again. So what is the threat? Well, what if he shows up and she's attracted to him and she likes him more than me, or, you know, something happens? All right, is that an actual threat? I mean, is that what you feel is happening in the relationship right now? I'm talking to myself. And I think, okay, well, probably not. I mean, she never talks about him and She seems very happy with me here today, and so maybe it's something I'm making up, but it feels threatening to me. All right, so whatever answer you come up with, I mean, these are just what's going on in your mind. We're just kind of, like I said, unraveling what this thing is bound in. It's always bound in real thought, like, that guy's a jerk, and I don't want him in our life, and that's where my thoughts end. That's it. And we don't go any further. So that's why I'm asking, okay, is what you're thinking of a threat in any way? Again, pause anytime. Number three is, why is this a problem? Why is this thought a problem? Or why is what you're thinking about a problem? And when you come up with an answer, because I mean, you'll come up with an answer, you'll be like, well, it's a problem because if he shows up, then it's going to hurt. And I'm going to feel like I'm being betrayed or rejected, or, you know, something's going to come up for you. Why is it a problem? And then when you come up with an answer, ask yourself the next question, why is that a problem? Then you explore each time you answer with another question, why is that a problem? And this is what's happening, is that you're drilling in or drilling down into the reasons that you've given this thought all your attention. What is the reason I'm giving all this thought my attention? Why is it a problem? Well, it's a problem because if I'm betrayed, he could break us up. Yeah, why is that a problem? And that's what I want you to do with yourself. And just keep asking yourself, okay, why is that a problem? Why is that a problem? And you can also ask yourself, what about that is a problem? What about that is a problem? That's drilling down, drilling in. And keep doing that. I mean, seriously, pause this episode and keep doing that until you're speechless. So I want you to try really hard and keep drilling in until you can't think of anything else. You may get stuck right away. I don't know. But what that does is, again, loosen the grip you have on it. It's really about exploring so deeply that you don't stay at a surface level emotion. Like, anger is a surface level emotion. What's under the anger? There's something under there. So when I ask, why is that a problem? That will start drilling into that anger and start breaking it apart and helping you look at it piece by piece, each component, and asking again, why is that a problem? Why is that a problem? And so on. So number four is there anything you can do about it? Or to ask a different way, is there anything I should do about it? And this goes back to it being a threat. Is this what I'm thinking about a threat in any way? Because if it is, what am I going to do about it? And when am I going to do something about it? So let me ask you, is there anything that you can or should do about this thought that you're having? And if so, what are you going to do? And when are you going to do it? Now, this doesn't mean I'm going to go punch that guy in the face. I don't want you to misinterpret it. It means that if there's something that you need to do, for example, my coworker is stealing my food from the fridge. You know, that's a, I don't know if that would be an obsessive thought, but let's just use that as a minor example. My coworker is stealing my food from the fridge, and all this time I haven't said anything about it, but I know he's doing it. All right, what are you going to do about it? Is there anything you can do, and is there anything that you should do? Well, yeah, I should talk to him, or I should report him to the boss, or I, you know, should do something. All right, when are you going to do it? And that starts to place some level of responsibility on you and a certain level of commitment to resolve the problem if you can, because that's what I call an open loop. Like, there's something still on my mind that I haven't found closure for. And until I close it, it's going to be an obsessive thought. I mean, that's what happens, is that there's not closure to this yet. So I need to do something about it. And if I can't do anything about it, it stays an obsessive thought. I'm always obsessed. I'm always obsessed. I'm thinking about this person or this event or what have you. Obsessive thoughts are always prevalent when you have not resolved an issue that you probably can. You may not want to. You may not want to go talk to that coworker because it's going to create conflict or confrontation, but you refocus on what you need to do for you, and you go, you know, I've got this, whatever you want to call it. I call it open loops. I've got this open loop, and I need closure to it. How am I going to resolve this so I can close this damn loop? And then you think, well, if I talk to him, it's going to be weird, and it's going to be accusatory, and he might say, that's not me, I'm not doing it, but I got to do it anyway. I got to get this over with. I have enough data where I can bring it up and talk about it with conviction in myself. And I'm going to do it. Damn it, I'm going to do it. So that's if you can or should do something about it. If not, let's go to the next thing. What belief or value is being challenged in you? And if it's not that, what boundary is being violated? It's a good question, right? You have beliefs. You have what you value, what's important to you in life. And then you also have personal boundaries. So what of those three is being violated? Let's go back to one of my two examples. There's an ex in my girlfriend's life. She never talks to him, but he's just there, and I know that any day he could just call her up. It's almost like a thought that really doesn't make sense, but I'm obsessing about it. So what belief or value, like I can think of a value, like I want her emotional attention on me and not to be on someone else. And when I think about that, I go, well, her emotional attention is not on him, or is it? And that's where the obsession starts. I have all these questions. Well, what if? What if? And is there a personal boundary? And I go, well, yes, definitely a personal boundary, because I have boundaries in relationships where if my partner wants to seek emotional connection or even a physical connection outside the relationship, that is violating a boundary in me. So it's good to identify what that is in you so that at least you know why you're feeling the way you do. And that's important. Once you know that, then you have some sort of a foundation for how that obsessive thought started. So figure that out, and let's go to the next one. How has this belief or value or boundary served you? How has this belief, value, or boundary served you? Or how has it harmed you? I mean, throughout your life, think about how this belief or value or boundary that got violated served you. Has it been serving you? Does it work well? Do you still need it? That's a great question. Do I still need this belief? Do I still believe that this component of a relationship is that important, that I need to obsess about it? Is that still a threat like it used to be? You know how you carry childhood fears with you? It's like the first time I ever saw a snake, I ran like the wind and ran to my mom and said, Mom, I saw a snake. I was really, really young. So I was scared of snakes for a while, but I got over it pretty quickly. But I brought that fear with me for many years, thinking that, you know, snakes were bad and dangerous. But, you know, when I grew older, I'm like, does that even really apply anymore? And I did some research on snakes, and a lot of them aren't poisonous, and some of them bite just because they're scared, and a lot of them won't bite at all. They'll just, you know, slither away. I was going to say run away. They'll just slither away, and they're harmless. So, you know, you learn what you're scared about and what you brought in from childhood and ask yourself if it really still applies. That's important too. So has the belief, value, or boundary served you in the past? And if it has, does it still need to be there? And or has it harmed you in the past? Has having this belief, value, or boundary harmed you in any way? Like, I remember I used to refuse to be with someone who drank any alcohol at all. And that was harmful to me because there were people in my life that I rejected just because they wanted a drink. It doesn't make any sense to me now, but I had to question it at one point in my life. All right, the next step is to remember that resistance is futile. If you're a Star Trek fan, you get the reference. But if you're not, just know that what you resist will amplify and persist. So allow yourself to have the thoughts that are coming up. If that means that you hate having these thoughts and they permeate your mind and you're obsessed about it, which is what we're talking about, obsessive thoughts, then allow them to be. Don't try to push them away. Let them come in. And even to the point where you go, you know what? Bring it on. Bring some more thoughts. What else could be terrible about these thoughts? Let it happen. You're obsessed anyway, so it's hard to push away. So you might as well just say, okay, bring them in, bring them on. What have you got for me? And just let it happen. Because if you resist it, not only does it make the thought stronger, but it makes you feel worse. Because resistance is suffering. So if you resist thoughts that you don't want, you are suffering and amplifying those thoughts. Kind of strange how it works, but it does work. And yes, if you're good at compartmentalizing, like my girlfriend said, just take the thoughts and put them in a box. Just meditate and take the thoughts and put them in a box and then put that box over there and maybe light the box on fire. She didn't say that, but I'm thinking, well, that might be something I might do. And that can work. If you're having trouble doing that, then just let them come up so that they don't intensify with the energy. So allow yourself to have those thoughts. Now, in order to further loosen the tight grip on the thought, ask yourself questions like this. What is this thought really about? Now, your answer has to be worded like this. It's about me, something, something, something. It's about me not wanting to be with someone like that. Or it's about me hating that they were together. Or it's about me finding her behavior disgusting. Something like that, but it has to start with, it's about me, dot, dot, dot. I want you to think about that. What is this thought really about? Make the answer about you and what you are doing with it in your mind. How does it affect you specifically? How specifically is it a problem in your life? Chew on that for a little bit. Next one, number 9, is zoom up and out of the thought by looking for a broader meaning. So you ask yourself, if I step back and look at the bigger picture, what does this all really mean? I mean, it's very similar to the one we just talked about. What is this thought really about? But this time we're going to almost visually zooming out from that thought, like it appears in our mind, and then we visually zoom back and step out and ask ourselves, what does this all really mean? What is the bigger picture? If I connect all the dots, what is this really telling me? Is there a different meaning? Is there a different message here? If I were an outsider looking in, what would I think this is all really about? Or how about this one? If someone took a picture of this thought I'm having and they put it in an envelope and sent it to an all-knowing guru, what would the guru tell me about this thought? Those are just some mind-altering questions that help you step out of the problem, not so much being inside and obsessed. In fact, this next one, number 10, zooms you out even further. You're going to imagine yourself in a space capsule looking down at Earth. You're just floating up there. You might see the country or the continent that you live in, but your entire life is down there while you look through this little window. I mean, you're comfortable, everything's good, you're enjoying the view, and you'll be home soon if you want. It's up to you. But you're looking down at all of life's problems way down there. How does that change things? So that's a neat little perspective shift as well. Now, number 11 is zoom back into your life. You're no longer in space, and you're in the here and now. Ask yourself, if I could have a different thought, what would I like to have? What would it be? Or you can go even further. Knowing that I can't change what the thought is about, you know, what upsets me, what thought would I like to have instead? This doesn't mean going into denial or avoiding actual problems. I mean, if you're being mistreated or abused, you need to do something about it and get into a safe environment as soon as possible. When I think about the thoughts that I'd rather have, knowing I can't make changes to what they're about, I would choose to be okay with everything. I want to have the thought that everything's going to be fine. And if I try that on while I'm obsessing, I'll be like, yeah, I want to be, but I don't feel that way. That's okay. I'm not telling you to resist that. I'm saying just think about what you would want to have, what thoughts you would want to have instead. You can't control the situation. You can't control people. You just want to be in a different place and have different thoughts. Well, I wish I wasn't so obsessed. Great. That could be a thought. Okay, if you don't want to be obsessed, what would you like to be? And have that thought come up. Because people who get obsessed and have all these negative thoughts don't typically visit the idea of having a thought they want. They're too busy thinking about the thought they're obsessed about. But just for this exercise, what thought would you like to have instead? What thought or what thoughts would you like to have instead? For example, if I try that on, I might go, I wish I was more mature. I wish I was more confident. I wish I was more able to handle information without obsessing about it. These thoughts might come to mind. So number 12 is ask yourself, did I or would I ever behave in the way that upsets me? For example, when I think about my coworker stealing food from the refrigerator and eating, you know, my lunch, would I ever behave that way? I don't think so. And is what upsets me something I've yet to be comfortable within myself? Would I want to be comfortable stealing food? No. But there are things in life. For example, I used to obsess about my ex-wife's sex life. Be like, she's had more sex than I have, and I used to think about that a lot. Is that something I've yet to be comfortable about in myself? Since then, I've learned to be comfortable with someone's sexual history. But I came to realize that I didn't have all the opportunities that maybe I could have taken in my past regarding sexual intimacy. I made choices because of, you know, low self-confidence, low self-esteem. I was very self-conscious. And I thought later on when I was married and she had a better sex life than I did, I had maybe some regret or resentment and I had some anger. So there were a lot of judgments that came up. But I've also figured out that I was yet to be comfortable with those things in myself. They were actually things that maybe I wanted to try when I was younger, you know, and I didn't. And I'm sorry if this is too much information, but you get the idea. You have to explore these thoughts. Is what I'm angry about something I've yet to be comfortable with in myself? Maybe yes, maybe no. It's all about changing or shifting perception. This process isn't designed to resolve. It's just designed to dissolve the problem layer by layer. And doing this process, let me ask you this. Where are you with the thought now? Is it worse? Is it better? And whatever it is, why is that? An answer may come, it may not, and that's fine. Maybe it's eliminated, maybe it got worse, I don't know, but why is it the way it is now? So these answers are going to come up for you and give you data to work with later, like when you think about these obsessive thoughts in a different way, because that's what happens, is that these thoughts will come up later because you're used to obsessing about them, but they're going to be a little different because you unwrapped it a bit right now. It's like a gift and you opened it up and there's some bubble wrap and, hey, there's a problem. And then you open that problem up a little bit and you find out that, hey, this is inside the problem. I didn't realize that was in there. And then whatever's inside, you open that up and you keep drilling in and figuring out, oh, so what I thought was the problem, which is this wrapped gift, really wasn't. It's actually further down and further down, drilling in. So with all that, let me wrap this up with a seed for your unconscious mind. Ask yourself if it's okay to find a resolution to all this. In fact, what's the first answer you come up with when I ask you this? Is it all right if your unconscious mind comes up with a solution so that you don't have to think about it? Is it okay with your unconscious mind to hash out the details while you go on with life feeling better knowing that the problem is being worked on in the background? Would that be okay? I'm just asking. Hope this helps. Be right back. All right, with us we have Asha with GetOutOfTheMess.com. She can connect you with a service called Legal Shield. And I can probably explain to you what Legal Shield is, and I'll probably get it wrong. So I'm going to let Asha explain to you what Legal Shield is and what kind of opportunities there might be for you with this service.
Well, Legal Shield is a legal service that was created many years ago to offer or make available fair quality representation to people that can't afford high retainers for high price attorneys. So it levels the playing field a bit where the little man can have access to legal advice and also get some defense time as part of their membership so that they have somebody in their pocket. They don't feel like they're out in the cold when stuff happens, because stuff does happen and we mostly just don't call on it. I've been using the service for many years. I love it. I get calls all the time. And I just wanted to throw in that I am not an attorney. I am a Legal Shield associate, which means basically I'm a sales rep. I make commissions when you buy the service. It's direct sales. I get lots of calls asking me to look this over or look that over. Now, I've used the service for many years, but you can make money if you're the person who's out and about talking to people. You're looking for some side income. I know people that have retired and now this is their full income and they make a lot of money. That's not how I do it. But there is some opportunity there if you're a go-getter and you're willing to get out there and just talk about it. I just did it because I wanted to stop handing all my referrals to somebody else and letting them take the money. So if you think that you want a legal advice line for around $20 a month and or legal insurance, or if you're looking for a legitimate business model with a quality service where you can make some extra income on the side, please give me a call, Asha, at 678-355-8777, or go to getoutofthemess.com.
Thank you, Asha. All right, welcome back. This is Ask Paul. This is where I read a listener email on the air. And guess what? I help them out. I do what I can. I try to help them through the challenge that they're in. And this one's an interesting one because I can relate to it very much so. I relate a little bit to all the emails that I get, but this one is right up my alley. It goes this way. Dear Paul, thank you for your podcasts. I have a long commute to work, 1 hour and 30 minutes, and your show definitely keeps me company on my drive and helps me with issues that may be related to your topics. My question is this: if you take time to get to know new friends in your life and you assess them as you go, removing the toxic friendships and people in your life, what happens when you have no one left? I have many friends, but the trouble is, because I traveled quite a bit, these friends are all living far away from me. I moved back to my hometown over 10 years ago, and I've made some friendships through work, and old friendships have been rekindled, and I'm part of some support groups and clubs. And as I move throughout life, these newish people have drifted in and out of my life for various reasons. Some friendships just fizzled out because we don't have much in common. Others drifted apart because nobody made the time to connect. And finally, some of them I have actively cut out of my life because they were just toxic for me. This last point has been a challenge for me, as the same holds true for romantic relationships. I do tend to attract or be attracted to toxic people. I understand why this happens in my life, as I have done quite a bit of reading and therapy for myself. So as time goes on, I am becoming more aware of my boundaries and staying away from people who could potentially be toxic for me. I am learning. What I am finding out, though, is that I have really not met any safe people out there. Everyone has issues, and that's in capital letters. I'm a single mom, and I don't have much time to myself. When I make time for my own social activities, I've tried joining groups that are related to my interests, but have found many groups rather cliquey and unfriendly. I'll keep trying to find a group that is more suited to me, but maybe it's just me? Most jobs that I have been in and friendships that I've had, people comment that I am compassionate, understanding, kind, fun, and positive. I'm unsure why I cannot find good friends and a good partner. Thanks again, and I hope to hear your thoughts on this. Kind regards. I'll call you Mary. All right, Mary, thank you so much for sharing that. And I can relate to this, not because of the long commute. I don't have a long commute, but I can relate in the sense that I've moved around a lot in my life. I've lived in New Hampshire, Massachusetts, North Carolina, Florida, Texas, California, Oregon, back to New Hampshire, and now I'm in Georgia. Might be Ohio. I've been to Ohio too. So I've lived in a lot of places, and it's funny because I think of some friends that I used to have, and they're still in the same town that when I knew them when we were like in our teens, they're still in that same town that we grew up in. And here I am. I've been to all these places. Not because I'm wealthy, a man of travel. It's because I've followed my heart and I wanted to try living in Florida near my dad and living in Texas with my wife and living in California. I've never been there and all these places that I wanted to try out. And during this time, the longer I stayed in a place, the more friends that I made. Now, I'm not one to make a lot of friends. I'm not a complete extrovert. Well, I'm hardly an extrovert. I'm definitely a self-admitted introvert, but I can turn on that extrovert if and when I need it. But for the most part, I've had good quality friends in the places where I stayed the longest. However, here's the problem with friends and personal growth. They aren't always synchronized. You can be working on yourself and you can have a good friend and then you heal from something in yourself and suddenly that good friend is wearing you out or they're doing behavior that doesn't align with your values or your boundaries and you're not sure if you want them in your life anymore. I had a really good friend that used to complain all the time and I never noticed it until I started working on myself. One of the things that really limited my friends, or at least the ones I'd had for a while, was my people-pleasing. I worked on my people-pleasing and found out that, oh, I don't want most of the people in my life. It's terrible, I know, but I created these friendships as a different person, and I was in a different place. And when those friendships were formed, I behaved differently, and I created friendships that weren't really authentic, that really didn't match me and my lifestyle deep down. Now, they matched my people-pleasing behavior, because everyone wants to be your friend when you'll do anything for them. So once that went away, it's not that they didn't want to be my friend anymore, but the kind of relationship that developed between us was draining me. And I didn't appreciate it anymore. And these are good people. The people that I've let into my trust zone, my friendship zone, they're really good people. And I found that I didn't choose like unethical people or immoral people. So it surprised me when I realized I don't really want these people in my life anymore. Every time I talk to them on the phone, I feel drained at the end of the call. I feel like I didn't get any value from the conversation. And I hate to admit this, because what if somebody out there is listening right now going, we were friends. It's not you, it's me. It's like, if I haven't talked to you in a while, it's not because I think you're bad. It's because I have worked on myself and found that I was the toxic one in the relationship, in some relationships. I was toxic because I wasn't showing people the authentic me. I wasn't showing up as the person I wanted to be. I was showing up as the person that I believed others wanted to see. I mean, that's what people-pleasing does. It's a way to show up in life as the person you think others want to see. And when you start healing from that, you start not needing the people that you needed so much. I mean, because that's kind of along the lines of a toxic friendship, is when there's a neediness there on one side or the other or both. Yes, you can have needs without toxicity, but I needed friends or people or anyone to like me. And that really caused a strain to me, for me. Not necessarily for them. I mean, they thought everything was fine. And when I was who I was then, it was fine. But over the years, as I moved around, yes, I started losing contact with them. But it wasn't because I didn't like them anymore. It was because I needed to grow out of who I was. And when you do that, when you're working on yourself, you find that the person you were was the person who attracted those people in your life at the time. The person you are today isn't that person anymore. So you might look at these people and say, wow, I'm really not interested in continuing a friendship or being in contact with this person. And then you feel kind of bad. You're like, wow, I feel like I'm abandoning this person because we were good friends. And I felt that before. I've looked at some friendships in my life and I go, wow, I feel like I'm abandoning these people. What am I doing? I'm just not a good person. You know, I felt like the bad guy. But at the same time, I can go, but I don't want to show up in the friendship as inauthentic. And so I can do with that one of two things. I can show up as my authentic self and see if they stick around, or I can just move on and let that friendship fade away. And I remember one particular friendship that I did show up as my authentic self. And he started reaching out to me and asking me questions because, you know, I started coaching and things like that. And he reached out and asked me some coaching questions. I thought that was great. And, you know, not that I'm looking for him as a client, but he saw me as the person that I had become, the person that I felt comfortable being. And he was looking to me for answers that he could trust, from a person that he could trust. I helped him out, I think, a little bit, but I never heard from him again. So maybe he didn't like my response. Maybe he didn't like the suggestions I gave him, or who knows. But I did show up as my authentic self. And then that friendship didn't continue to blossom. It just faded away, like I said. So that told me that, you know, I'm in this different place in my life. He doesn't want to meet me in that place. And I don't want to be the person that I was with him, so maybe this isn't going to work out. Now, I don't think about all this consciously. In fact, I'm just visiting these thoughts now since I read your letter, Mary, and I'm coming to the conclusion that this is probably or exactly what happened. Your personal growth automatically filters out people and situations that are not compatible with you anymore, and or those who are toxic for you. Or the people that you were toxic to. So you have to keep that in mind too, that the person you were could have been toxic to other people too. You know, I can look back and go, I was a nice guy. Come on, I was a nice guy. But the person I was showing up as was still toxic in a way. Not in the general sense of abusive or anything like that, but maybe. I mean, like in a couple of my relationships, I know that I was emotionally abusive. Now that I know what emotional abuse is, but you know, I didn't know that then. So there's that aspect of it, that as you grow in yourself, people that knew you as the person you were typically want to continue connecting with the person you were. But as you grow in yourself, then you're going to find that maybe there's less compatibility, maybe there's some toxicity, and you just need to move on. And the fact that if you do move around, you don't have enough time to develop really solid friendships. Which is something that I did for many, many years. You know, I would stay 3 years here, 5 years there, 1 year in another state. And I never really made any solid friendships, except in the places that I stayed the longest. And even then, because I was working on myself and healing from a lot of stuff, that healing, and this is the second part of my answer to you, is what defines future compatibilities. Now, you said that you've done a lot of work on yourself, becoming more aware of your boundaries, staying away from people who could be potentially toxic for you. But I'm here to say, and this somewhat dives into a little bit of a spiritual outlook, like 20%, and then the 80% of this is also very practical and sciencey, in my opinion, is that when you heal, and when you learn something about yourself, and when you know what you want for yourself and know who you are and are on a good path yourself, you're going to attract people that complement what's going on in you. Now, if you've heard my show before, you've heard me say that your dysfunction will attract other people's dysfunction in a complimentary way. For example, if you are a rescuer, fixer, helper person, people pleaser, you are going to be attracted and attracting takers, people who are dependent, people who love to receive but not necessarily give. Because your helper personality fits their, for lack of a better term, victim personality in a way, dependent personality. When there's a compatibility there, you will automatically attract and be attracted to the complementary personality. I've seen this over and over again. And like I said, it's 80% science because, you know, there's nonverbal body language, there's smells, like pheromones and things like that. There's the way you sound, there's the way you look, and there's all kinds of attraction factors going on there. But also in a spiritual way, it seems like people show up in your life when you've reached a certain level of healing in yourself. And it's weird. You'll get a phone call out of the blue, or you'll get an email, or someone will show up at your door. You'll bump into someone that you haven't seen in 20 years, and you're like, what in the world is this person showing up in my life now for? This is really strange. I haven't seen this person in 20 years. This is what happens, and this is what I see happen over and over again, is that as soon as you reach a breakthrough in yourself and you reach a new level of healing, a new level of growth, or what I like to call an emotional evolution in yourself, suddenly you're attracting different people, and different people are showing up in your life. And you're no longer looking for healthy people. They're just showing up in your life. So this goes along with point 2.5, or you can make it a third point. It's that in order to attract and be attracted to people you really want in your life, aside from the self-help stuff and working on yourself, you do things for yourself too. You become active in things that you like. And you did say something about, what'd you say, going to meetups or something like that and finding that people are clicky. Well, let's put it this way. I used to inline skate. I did it for like 10 years, 10 plus years. I loved it. And then I had some back problems. I had the sciatic nerve issue and I had to get back surgery. I sold my skates. And from that point on, I never skated again. Just like last week, I said, damn it, I'm going to go skating again. I want to go skating again. So I finally ordered a pair of inline skates and they should be here next week. And I'm going to skate after many years of being off skates. This is something that I want to do for me. Not to go meet other people and skate with them, although that will happen. But that's not my primary goal. My primary goal is to focus on what I want to do for myself. It's an activity. It's recreation. It'll keep me moving because I sit behind a desk all day long and exercising is like the last thing on my mind. So I've got to work on that. And I know that I need improvement there. So that's what I'm going to do. But I also know that what's going to happen is that as soon as I'm in that realm of, you know, skating and bumping into other people that are skating and maybe looking online to find out where to skate, as soon as that happens, people are going to show up in my life that either want to do the same thing, want to talk about the same stuff, want to hang out. People that I actually will enjoy being with are going to show up. It's sort of like the same thing when I started podcasting. I didn't have most of the online friends that I have now before I started podcasting. But as soon as I created the podcast, I just had a bunch of people show up in my life. It wasn't that I was seeking friendships. They just happened because I focused on what I wanted to do for myself. And this is a hard concept because you think, I got to go out and make friends. I got to go out and go to these meetups. Yes, that can and will work. But are you doing it for you? For example, if you go to a meetup about, I don't know, astronomy. I don't know if they have meetups on astronomy, but you're not really interested in astronomy, but you're going to do it just to meet smart people. I can almost guarantee it's, well, I can't guarantee it, but I'm going to say that most likely you're not going to develop good friendships, good bonds. Because you might find that the people there are passionate about astronomy. And imagine if you were passionate about something and you met someone who was also passionate about that same thing. that's an entirely different kind of bond. But if you just say to yourself, well, I'm going to go learn how to knit and maybe I'll make some friends, I don't think it works as well. But if you really loved comic books and you go to Comic-Con, comic book convention or whatever it's called, you could tell I'm not in that area, but if you go to those conventions and you dress up, you're going to meet people that are so passionate about the same things, maybe not the same characters, but you're all in that same realm and you think very much alike. I have a feeling you're going to find people that think very much like you, and you live in this different universe in your head, and you like to get involved inside the comic book world and follow the storylines and things like that. You'll have a lot to talk about, and you'll have a lot of bonding that will take place. But if you're going somewhere to learn something new or learn more about something and you expect really solid friendships to form, they could, but you're more likely going to find someone that is very much in the same realm you are. If you want to meet people that are like you or like you, and this is the point I'm driving home, do what you like to do. Do what you want to do for you. Like I said, when I started podcasting, I met so many good people in podcasting, and you know, not all of them I have a lot in common with because we all teach and talk about different things, but I finally met another podcaster who came out with a show who talks about personal growth, and he lives near me, and I was like, hey, we should get together and talk. I wanted to find out more about this guy, and we met, and he's right in alignment with a lot of stuff that I teach, and we learn a lot off of each other. You know, I have more experience in podcasting, and he has a younger perspective on life and family and personal growth, and he seems to be well-read, and he stays in shape, so he has things about him that I aspire for myself, and we get along great. And it wouldn't have happened if I didn't pursue the stuff that I wanted to do for me. Now, podcasting, the stuff I do here, is for you. I'm not saying this is all for me. This is something I want to do to teach what I know, to send a message of what I've learned and give it to you. But you get the idea. You pursue for you, and suddenly you find that you're developing good friendships. So there's my take on friendship. And I totally relate to what you're saying, Mary, because every single friend that I've made, I've nearly 99% lost contact with. Even one of my best friends that we really got along great, he's emotionally connected, he's an intelligent person, I rarely ever talk with him, maybe once a year. I rarely ever talk to him anymore because we're both on our own journey. We both live in entirely different places on the map, and we both have our own lives to live. But I see good friends come and go, and you know what you're saying is that everyone has issues. What's going on? How am I going to keep friends? How am I going to make friends if everyone has issues? I still believe that you will attract, and this is that 20% spiritual thing, you'll attract the people that complement you as you focus on yourself, as you heal yourself, as you grow inside. And that's important to remember, because the more you focus on wanting something out there and pulling it into you and trying to bring it into your life, the less likely you'll find the perfect person, whether that's a friend or an intimate partner. It can and does happen all the time. When you go out and seek, suddenly you might find. Suddenly it happens. But in my opinion, a big part of it is letting go of the pursuit. Letting go of the pursuit outside of yourself and pursuing what you want for yourself inside yourself. Yeah, you might want a partner, but what do you want to do? If you were your own partner, what would you do with you? Where would you go? Where would you take you? And as you do that more, suddenly the right people are gravitating towards you. It's pretty weird, but I've seen it happen, and I definitely believe that something's going on out there. So there's what I have for you, Mary. I hope that helps. And to all the friends that I used to know, I still love you. I've done a lot of healing and growth throughout my life. And I even talked to one of them a week or two ago. I think he called me out of the blue accidentally, like I was programmed in his phone. And he calls me up And I was like, hey. And he goes, who is this? And I was like, you don't know who you called? You butt dialed me, didn't you? And he goes, what? And we had a good conversation. I was like, hey, it's good to talk with you again. And we caught up in each other's lives. And it was neat. And I said, well, if you ever feel like butt dialing me again, give me a call. And it was a good conversation. But we both had a good talk. And that's just the way it is. Sometimes you have friends that you can pick up a year later, 10 years later, and nothing's changed. And when it still feels like a good connection, then you have a good friend. When it doesn't feel like a good connection, they're still a good person. It just doesn't work as a friendship. So again, I hope that helps. Thanks for writing in, Mary, and thanks for listening to this show. We're about to end another episode. Let me come back, say some thank yous, and give you my final words. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I'd like to thank, let's see how you say this, Z Mystery Led Zeppelin, and Ra to the J, or is it Ra to the J? Well, they both left glowing reviews in iTunes. Thank you. You made my day. Thank you so much. And I want you to call today's sponsor, Asha, with getoutofthemess.com. She will connect you with excellent what she calls legal insurance, and I think that's a great name for it. I use it. I've been using it for the last year or so. And anytime I have any legal question, I just pick up the phone. And I tell you what, $20 a month is a lot cheaper than $250 an hour. And you're talking to high-quality attorneys in highly reputable law firms. Why don't you give Asha a call at 678-355-8777, and she'll connect you up with them. And I want to thank everyone for buying the Overwhelmed Brain book. Yes, it's a physical book you can hold in your hand, take on the plane, give to your toxic stepfather, if you have one. I wonder if my stepfather has a copy of that. Well, if you're out there, stepdad, I won't call you by name, you appear in the book a few times. It might be a learning experience for you. You might be like, hey, you're talking about me. Yes, I talk about you sometimes. Well, that's okay. If he gets a copy, then maybe he'll learn something new and something good will come his way. I hope so. Get the Overwhelmed Brain book in any Barnes & Noble, bookstore, and of course Amazon. It's what I call the A to Z of self-empowerment. So if you don't feel empowered, then listen to every episode I've ever created or get the book. The Overwhelmed Brain, Personal Growth for Critical Thinkers. And I'd like to thank members of the Patron Program. If you're not familiar with the TOB Patron Program, that's where you can get private episodes that I record, anywhere from 5 minutes to 50 minutes long. I also play behind the scenes of some of the interviews that I've done. That's kind of a neat thing to listen to if you haven't heard the process that hosts go through. And it's kind of fun to just to listen to and see where we take it. And also, you get the deeper learning worksheets that will help you dive deeper into some issues that you may have going on with you. And group training calls, and something I have coming up probably today, if you're listening to this on Sunday the 19th, at 11 a.m. Eastern, I'm holding an Ask Me Anything call. It's a video or a phone call if you want to call in, but you got to be a patron member. So go to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com, and you got to join to connect with me on that call. So I hope to see you there. And those of you who are in the Patreon program, I thank you. You are not only getting all that stuff, but you're supporting the show too. I hope you see it as a win-win situation like I do. And whether you're a patron or not, I want to thank you if you're using the Amazon link on the website. The Amazon link at theoverwhelmedbrain.com is the easiest way to give back because every time you shop there, the show receives pennies on the dollar for each sale. It adds up and it's very helpful. Your shopping habits are making a difference, so thank you. And finally, thank you to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And to end the show, I'm going to read a very quick email and give you a very quick answer, because I think I can answer this pretty quickly, even though it's a very sensitive, very touchy subject. And that is, someone wrote to me and said that he just got married to a woman only a few months ago, and they were having issues even before the wedding. They did a lot of arguing, and then fast forward to now, she had an affair and admits wrong. But they both decided to work it out, so they got back together. And now she feels that because his family knows that they'll never look at her the same. And she thinks that she doesn't want to work this out anymore. She thinks that they're looking down on her and that maybe this isn't going to work out as planned. And now she's not even talking to him, except they are going to counseling, but otherwise they don't speak. And he asked me, what do you make of what she believes about all of this? He says, I know we can work it out because the love is still there. It's just her that puts up this wall. What can I do? Are there any articles or references to help her feel a little bit more at ease? Is there anything I can say that you recommend? Thank you for your help. Well, you know, I have an opinion on this, and that is when you're in a relationship and you make a mistake or do something on purpose, or there's any kind of betrayal or deception or lie, and you realize that you did badly or wrong and you want to work it out, and you come to an agreement with your partner that you do want to work it out. So you get back together, and at that point, usually the person who stepped out, betrayed, lied, deceived, is going to do everything they possibly can to make it up. They're going to be forthcoming with information. They're going to be honest. They're going to be sensitive and know that you're sensitive. It's going to be a step-by-step, day-by-day, building trust process. And it's slow. It can be painful. It can be very hard. But when you both really want to make it work, you're going to do it. It's going to happen. It's going to be, like I said, slow and painful and hard. But it's going to happen. So here's my opinion, and I could be completely wrong. So don't take this as hard data that you can take to the bank. It's not like that. My opinion is, if she's saying that, I don't know about this because now your family looks at me in a funny way. Why is your family involved in both of your decisions to make the marriage better? To work it out, I mean, to heal it. Why are they involved? Do you live in the same house? Because that would certainly be a factor. If you all live together and you got those glaring eyes from people that don't trust you, you know, your family. Although in your letter, and I don't think I read this, they said, hey, you know what? Everyone makes mistakes. Either we've been cheated on or we've cheated. You said your family is accepting of her. So this leads me to further go down the road of, why is she using your family as an excuse? That's my personal opinion. I think she's using your family as an excuse. And maybe that's because she doesn't want to face something inside of her. Like, I've already cheated on him and now I feel guilty. But now, maybe I'm not in love with him and I might want to leave. But that would make it even worse. Now I would feel even more guilty. I'm just throwing that out there. I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying, when I look at this from an outsider's perspective, and I go, what in the world does your family, who already supports her, have anything to do with you and her? Because that's where the focus is, you and her. If she's choosing to focus on what other people think about her in wanting a relationship with you, I think there's more going on that meets the eye. You might have to ask the hard questions. And I think I just talked about hard questions last week. You have to ask the hard questions if you want to know what's really going on. That could be one of the hard questions. What's really going on? Is it really my family? Are you still in love with me? Tell me the truth. You know what? We've been through a lot. Is this marriage something you want? You know what? Dig into those hard questions and get the truth. You may not like the truth. It may hurt like hell, but you need to know. You don't want to stay in this rut. You want to continue. I mean, and something that you said, you're going to counseling, but when you're not in counseling, you don't speak. There's a lot more going on there, because someone who really wants to make up for the fact that she betrayed you in that way, she's not going to make it harder for you to love her. It just doesn't work that way. There's something funny about this. So I hope this doesn't come as a big shock to you. I don't want to just lay that out there and say this is the truth. It's not. It's just an opinion. It's just an idea. It's just an angle. But I do want you to ask the hard questions. because maybe there's something more going on there that meets the eye, and I think it's time to find that out so that you don't invest any more time in something that really may not work out or not. I mean, maybe there's something else going on there. So there's my opinion. I hope that helps. I want you to get somewhere with that and get some resolution, even if the answers aren't what you want to hear. At least they're answers. So to conclude this show, let's just say this. Sometimes you do have to ask the hard questions. Sometimes the questions are so hard that you'd rather stay in denial. You'd rather not know. And I tell you what, that is a dangerous place to be. Sometimes you just have to know, because if you don't, then how much time are you willing to let go by until you find out the truth? My mom stayed in denial for so long. Her denial was, he's gonna leave every day. He's either gonna leave or die because he drinks himself to pass out every night. I mean, she just had this thought that eventually something's going to happen. And I finally told my mom, I was like, you know, he's gonna outlive everyone in the family. He's got Superman blood. He cannot die. Not that I want him to. I'm just saying that if you're waiting for it to happen, he's been drinking for, I mean, as long as I've known him, 45 years. He's been drinking that long. He's not going to die from drinking. He's just not. I mean, yes, he's going to have problems, health problems here and there. But after 45 years, you might want to start changing your story and go, well, I guess that's not going to happen. I guess he's not going to leave. He's not going to die. So I need to do something for myself. Hopefully you don't wait that long. If you have something going on in your life, like for example, I used to work for this company, and the company would be like, you know, when we sell, I want you to have a piece of this company too. I was like, really? And he goes, of course. When I sell the company, I want to reward the employees with the profits. I was like, wow, that sounds fantastic. And that gave me the incentive to keep working there. After 4 years, I was like, wait a minute. He may not sell the company for many years. And if he does, wouldn't he split the profits with his wife or his family or his kids? And I had all these thoughts come to mind. And I was like, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. I'm relying on something that may or may not happen. But what do I want for myself today? I don't really like the job that much. Am I going to stick around in hopes that he one day sells the company and I profit? Well, I left that company, how long? 10 years ago, maybe? And to this day, he still hasn't sold it. I would have been there for another 10 years, and there wouldn't have been anything like that. And even when he does that mean I would make a profit? Probably not. There was nothing signed. There were no contracts. It was just something that he said. And I chose to believe it because it made my life easier. But this is what we end up doing. We end up believing things that we want to be true. But what if they're not true? We have to make decisions that are right for us today. We need to do that because otherwise we stay in limbo until something happens outside of us. My mom stayed in limbo until my stepfather finally left 45 years after their marriage started. She wanted it to end, I don't know, 44 years before that. Or 35 years before that, I don't know. But it didn't. But she waited for it. She knew it would happen someday. And now here she is in her 70s, and it finally happened. Great, now you can start living your life. I don't want you to wait that long. And if you've already waited that long, start thinking about what you want for you. It's never too late. I had someone write to me who said, you know, I'm in my 50s, now it's too late. I'm like, 50s? It's only 4 years away from me. I hope it's not too late. That's still young to me, so it's never too late. I don't care if you're in your 90s, it's never too late to do something for you. Focus on what you want for you, and the right people will show up in your life. Am I right? Am I 100% right? Do I know this for a fact? I don't know. I can't prove it 100%, but wouldn't it be a lot of fun trying to prove me wrong? Go ahead. Try to prove me wrong. Focus on yourself. Give yourself what you need. And you can start doing that by opening your mind and stepping into your power. And make sure to be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing. It's Peter. I need to do my Think Positively segment. Hello? Hello? I also need to ask you about this pink slip. What does it mean?
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 U.S.-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out Pear.com today to learn more. That's Pear.com.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.